because they don't want to hurt the family. They don't want to destroy the relationship between themselves and the family. Number two, they think they can do a better job of working out the situation. Number three, they think that by calling the social worker, it might be a better option. Number four, they're afraid of the reprisals that will come from the family and the you know, community on them. Number five, they don't trust Child Protective Services. They don't trust them. They think they don't do a good job. Number six, we feel that if we report it to Child Protective Services just for a condition of neglect, that the child will immediately be taken out of the home and put into foster care. And that doesn't happen, most of the time. Number seven, we lack the access to competent mental health specialists and the community sources that can help resolve the situation. Number eight, as private doctors out in the field, we are worried that if it takes a week to gather information, whether it's x-rays or whatever tests, that during that period, we have this dilemma that we cannot ensure the child's safety. And then there might be serious injuries. And lastly, we don't want to testify in court. It takes too much time. And even though New York State guarantees that we are protected, we have immunity from prosecution, physicians have been sued through malpractice. In conclusion, in 2002, there were only 2 million cases of child abuse that was reported in the United States. Okay? 20% of them were actual physical abuse, and almost 2,000 children were killed. We under-identify and under-report cases of child abuse. And because of these medical errors, this results in continued abuse, severe injury, and possible death. And this is what physicians, especially pediatricians, because 90% of the child abuse occurs between ages 1 and 4. And this is what we are presenting with. And this is what Rabbi Elbaum is now presenting with. This is a difficult, difficult problem. What do we do? Because we're bound by New York State law, we are bound by Halakha.
We have my assignment for this and the next case.
As mentioned, physicians, dentists, nurses, and other allied healthcare providers, including teachers, school officials, are required by state law to report child abuse. And as mentioned, I wasn't even aware of it to that extent, but looking into the subject a little bit earlier, a few days ago, this obligation extends even according to suspicion of child abuse. And the family members or friends are aware of child abuse, The question is, what course of action the Yid is going to take? The question is, how does halacha really guide the Yid in these areas? So the obvious question would be, if a child is brought to a doctor with evidence of battered child syndrome, the question would be, is that halacha is permissible for a doctor to contact authorities? And if there's a chance, let's say, that authorities might take the children out of the home and place them in a non-Jewish foster home, does that influence the halakhic response? Because now you're dealing with not only a child being removed from his home, if that happens, but a child being placed in a non-Jewish foster home and raised as a goy, or at least being fed parasites and so on and so forth, even though he's not a bar kiyuva, but there's too much conflict which talks about that, even for young children. They put in an institution, in a mental health institution that only serves narcotic food, and says they don't put him there. He's even the one of the shreite, he says, but the heat of Macholos Tashua is being attempted in the Kalev. But putting that aside now, in the Sefer Nishim Sabron that we have here on the sheet, states in the name of the Tren Zalman Orbach, the child was brought to a hospital or to a doctor's office with signs of child abuse, he says, this may not be allowed to return home. So Mizalmatinus, if it can be ascertained his injuries were sustained as a result of the intentional actions of one of both parents. Now, that may be difficult to do. If it can be ascertained that this was done with intentional actions, which many times is subject, of course, to the way it appears to the doctor, it's told in a lot of shikul adat. But if, to the best of your knowledge, everything indicates and points in the direction this was intentional, it's highly unlikely that this happened in sort of an accident. Too many odds against it. The Shemizam that allowing the child to be returned home would be endangering the child's welfare. He says, and the doctor has to notify the authorities because we're dealing with a life-threatening situation. And that's what we're talking about, because you have to differentiate the two types of child abuse. I can understand some are life-threatening. Some, I guess, may down the road, people are child abusers. I'm not sure what the pathology is of child abusers, to what extent. But then there are cases that parents who beat up children, not stop, really beat up children, but not necessarily life threatening situations. If you're dealing with life threatening situations, the parents are considered to be a rabbis. And a rabbis is a halacha, and he's even able to go after a pursuer, and one's even chad misa. All the laws of Mesir and so on, Baklav, don't apply at all. Just in general, and again, people should take this into their own hands. But there's a great, great misconception, Michal, every time when someone is reported, it's a Mesir. Mesir is not allowed to report someone. It's not true. Mesir basically means it's giving someone over for punishment in the hands of authorities and so on and so forth. And there's more detail to that as well. But if someone is a menace to society, doing harm to society, he's dangerous to society, there's no halachic problem whatsoever to have him reported. And put them behind closed doors. Simply take them out of the possibility to be able to inflict any more harm. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Stein Weiss in Shalchut Mechatzur talks about a reckless driver, and we have a lot of them. That's a good life. And maybe once you spoke to him, twice, he doesn't know. These people who just have this chronic problem, or people just always park unsafely. In a way, because this is the way it is. They don't have a legal park, they're just in the park unsafely. He says there is no halachic child in the field. A person who drives recklessly, certainly seems under the influence, and so on and so forth. These people are dangerous to society, these people are hazardous to society, and the club does not fall under the rubric of Mesira at all. So we have to understand that. In the same way, I get parents which molest their children in a sexual way, so I'm not getting into. There's no problem, but there's a few who actually report them based upon the halachic that they have a din of a raider. So just to see a little bit of the lashonis that we have in the Mishnah Savron, we'll go through it quickly here on top, which is the first item on the sheet. He points out as follows. He says, Yelod oitinoik, shehuvel beis choylem, im tasmoyne shel hayelod hamuke, the abused child, dayin mishivorim rubni gugoylos, he may have fractures on the head, or the gapayim dimdumim beivurim apnimim, you see that there are blood spots right in his inner organs, ekev makris due to makris or beitis koshis, he was kicked, he was hit, he was beaten. Or in kviyos koshes mesh, or burns. Kashmalo mayim reskim, could be either through electricity, or could be inflicted through scalding water. Chinatu bachzoris who been mazed. Not an accident. Are the echo de shnei oirav, one or two parents. That also, it is also, he says, achar hatipul amushlam, after the doctor dealt with him, lahachzir oise lebeisav. It's also to allow the child to return home, ki oz yamshifu lahakrish boyad hamodr. Biglaus konas anaposhis hamamoshis. He's talking about where there's life-threatening situations here. Al haroise lohoidia lebeis hamishpot, the doctor should inform the authorities. Vahozal yideitav beis hamishpot, mavirin et atinuk vadishpocha, he says, umnoin lemoises, was taken into a foster home, foster care. Nearish aimed the shaila shel moise. There's no shaila of mesila here. Nikiv mishem meduber betzkonas nefoshe shel mamish. Well, a hirin din shel raider that a din of a pursuer. If you see someone chasing someone to kill him, you'll have to kill and murder the raider to save the victim. He says, therefore, he says, you're talking shemuter gam imavirim esatinik belas brayul mishpochel moise leidati. Even if the child will be placed into a non-Jewish home. Of course, then all the effort has to be later replaced, in fact, to take him out of the non-Jewish foster home, to try to place him possibly in a Jewish foster home. But that shouldn't be the mania, based on the idea that they might put him to a non-Jewish foster home to prevent you from consulting the authorities, as you point out later. And look at the next paragraph immediately, right there, and it's still number one, because he concludes, by the way, the Hitzki Miti Agurim Shemizam Norbat. Okay, so that was the first paragraph. And then he says, V'om Ali Agurim, because he doesn't show him the Yashik Shlitit, Shemuter L'Reife L'Hoidiyah L'Shultainis. Yashik told me it's mutter for a doctor to inform the authorities. Apilu kishikayim sofis the chutzlaret sheyelit yishlach lemishpocha moisit shel goyim. They put him into a goyish institution. Achar came, but of course after that all of lasis b'chol yecholto lidoig lozeh sheyelit yimotel mishpocha moisit yehudi. The same concurrent stock you have here in the Chitz Eliezer. We're going to spare the time, but basically you have the two paragraphs. The Chitz Eliezer delineates and said that there are cases where it is life-threatening situations. Then he says there's no question, he says, that even if it can be put into a goyish foster home, you know it for sure, that should not stand in the way. Saving the life is the most important. The parents are raising, and of course you should consult the authorities. The letter he says there's no real kashash of tzuch nefesh. But still, it would be better for the child to be taken out of the home. There's no question. Here he makes a distinction. It is not the tzuch nefesh question, but never the child is being hurt and victimized by his parents. Not life-threatening, but nevertheless. Terrible situation, harmful situation, is to be put into a goyish foster home, he says, then one should not do so. And he invokes a very interesting chazal, Gadol hamachti o yoytem ha-hargoy. As bad as it is to be in a home where someone got is beaten, but Gadol hamachti o, to put someone and cause them to sin, so to speak, and to do all the things, of course, which is contrary to Jewish behavior, he says, might even be doing him a greater disservice. But he only uses that far in the case where it's not a Tukhnefesh issue, it's the issue which is a harmful situation as it is. But if there is a chashash of Tukhnefesh, then you have to know for sure, there is a chashash, a reasonable chashash, that these parents, what they are doing to the child, can be a life-threatening situation, so then he says there's no chashash on the theory. Let me just conclude with one situation here. It's not our issue here, but you can look on your own, so I'll just make notice of it, which is the number three, because that is also the situation that it talks about. Happens with the Rebbe's child molestation, recording a Rebbe. And this, unfortunately, is coming to light all too much and too often. More than you'd like to know about it, but this is a thing that, in personal cases, quite a number of cases. And clearly, by all accounts, but again, not some suspicion, because you can ruin the life of the Rebbe as well. The moisture out of Kashash may have to remove the Rebbe from the job and so on and so forth, but we've warned authorities. But all the indications really seem that this is what the Rebbe really has done. So then he said there's no shadow of material here. But again, you have to be careful. And as he points out, one should really, of course, go to a rabbi and discuss it. Never confront the rabbi, because some rabbi have the idea that you're never allowed to call the authorities and so on and so forth. It's a hard, old, fine line to draw. And there's also a difference between Hasidic rabbi and non-Hasidic rabbi. Just runs the gamut in certain attitudes. So you could sort of like pre-guess ahead of time what the outcome of the stock is going to be, depending on who you're going to ask. This is the way it is. You know, it's dire consequences of the child that they're dying because of this special situation, which is not the proper thing to have been taken care of. But the basic, I guess, is the consensus of the situation that we are talking about, that basically there is no shala of Nesira where you can ascertain the facts and be sure the individual being, you know that this individual really is, but without establishing facts, certainly it's a bigger flag the other side as well, you can't break the family, and so on and so forth. There's tremendous repercussion on both sides. The direction of the halakha society is really huge.
Yes, I'll ask the first question. What about a situation where there's not the nazis, but say parents of a large family, well-meaning people, who just can't seem to handle it, and the children are getting into often life-threatening, traumatic situations because of what would be categorized as negligence?
I think that's called nazis.
In other words, not being able to handle the situation and therefore bring you to do something willfully or openly. The stupid that may lead to it, which would be called an agent. The only time it's not an agent is because an accident, your elbow pushed the pot of hot water over and the shit got burned, or he tripped because your foot was in the wrong place or something like that. But if parents, because they lose it and they can't handle it, they really don't want to hurt the child in their mind. But seeing that their behavior is that they really are inflicting it, and that it's a situation where they're made because they can't control the situation, they're doing it. They're doing it.
I can comment on that, that Dr. Samuel was saying about abuse, but what Dr. Leibovitz is mentioning is neglect.
Neglect
is certainly a reportable state offense. That means we as caretakers have to report neglect.
Right.
But often, I think that's what everybody's getting to, but we know that actually the slum world has more children than most, so you know, often I would be a resident at New York Hospital, and every Friday night they would, you know, they would come in with a burned child. I mean, I would tell you from when I was there, at least 10 to 15 times, it was a from child burnt on a Friday night, whether it was from the cans or the leftover, whether it was from boiling water, whatever it was. So they would always ask, and they came out, subsequently they came out with a book at New York Hospital about the Orthodox home.
Mm-hmm.
But we as physicians do have an obligation to report neglect, but yet the from community will frown upon any doctor, and some of these, you know, organizations and people who refer patients will threaten you with taking away, not referring any more patients, should you report this.
Right. So the place to discuss the shaila, whether dina de machusa, dina bechlal, whether it applies in these areas or not, but it seems from many of the contemporary writings that you see situations of neglect, the first step should be to try to educate the parents and treat them. Explain to them how important that is and how serious the situation is. Maybe this is a one-time occurrence, but you see this repeatedly happening. After trying to explain to them, and then seeing that this is a situation which pressure they just sometimes need to handle it, then the child becomes very serious about having to report them. So the situation has to be evaluated.
But just one thing, again, I want to, I mean, the bruises and all those things, that's easy. But again, the law of your state says if there's any suspicion that if you do not do it, then the physician is subject to criminal liability and prosecution. How do we handle that? It's very clear, this is state law. I'm not going to mention the website because I can't get it. This is right here. How do we do that? How do we handle that?
I can ask you what the law is.
Okay, the last case actually I will present. I guess I'll present the case first and then give a little background. This is an area that for some people might seem esoteric, but in fact it has to do with transplants. In fact, this is something that in this day and age, unfortunately, and in some ways fortunately, affects just about everyone will know, a family member, a friend, an acquaintance who is struggling in this situation, and that is the area of organ procurement and organ allocation. The case is a true case, happened last Cholamoid Pesach. A young Jewish person was in a motor vehicle accident in Phoenix, Arizona, not a Shomer Mitzvah, was declared brain dead. I guess I'll take we're all on the same page. There was a debate about this yesterday. I think it's safe to say that in most Haredi circles, the brain death is not accepted as criteria as the criteria of death. And the family opted to choose a method of organ donation called directed donation, where they instructed the hospital to harvest the organs of this person and directed that the organs be donated to Jewish people, which is legal. They can do that. There was one controversial case recently reported in the New York Times of someone directed that organs be donated to white people, which is a little bit more controversial and for some discussion, but it's certainly legal in this country to do that. Calls went out throughout the country to Hatzalah organizations, Speaker Cholim organizations, get us a list of the Jewish people who are on transplant waiting lists. And of course, there was all kinds of scurrying about, and before they knew it, they found out there were many, many people waiting for organs, Jewish people waiting for organs, and the question became how to allocate these organs, assuming the logistical factors being not limiting. The organs are in Phoenix, and the patient is in New York, and there's issues I won't go into. I'll just, as by way of background, briefly discuss what the current situation is in this country and what is possible to happen in the not too distant future. Currently, there are 90,000 people in this country awaiting organ transplantations. There are not nearly enough organs to provide the life-saving transplants to these people, so significant numbers will die on the waiting list. Ways of so-called bypassing the standard waiting list include directed donations, which we just mentioned, and that is where someone can direct an organ to a specific individual or to a specific group. Number two would be living donations, where a living person can donate to a friend or acquaintance or a relative, either one kidney or a piece of a liver. These are subject to some controversy because of the fact that solicitation of such directed donation or living donation can cross over a boundary of what is proper in terms of putting pressure on the potential donor or the family. What is being discussed now is possible solutions to this, and this is something that I feel the withdrawal through its legislative action might become involved in. In most of Europe, the law is presumed consent. That means if you're driving around in Europe, bear this in mind. If someone is brain dead in most of Europe, it is presumed, unless the person specifically stated otherwise, that they consent to organ harvesting or organ transplantation. What is being suggested in this country, I doubt that will ever come to pass here, is mandated choice that a person has to, for example, when they file their tax return, check off that they either do or do not want to be an organ donor. The rationale for that is that 85% of people in this country say that organ donation is a good thing, although when push comes to shove in a time of grief or crisis, most people will not choose to donate their organs, so the idea was to get them to choose when they're in a relaxed atmosphere. This includes a stipulation that the family cannot opt out. In other words, if the person chose that, and the person is now in that situation, is no longer is brain dead, the family cannot come along and say, wait, so the SRL, this is not allowed. So there would be no option for opting out. And thirdly, is to provide various incentives to potential donors, and these may include things as tax relief or paying for funeral costs, which are not so great concern. But what is a great concern is to provide points for potential donors should they or their family members ever be potential recipients, which would put people of our community at potentially great disadvantage. These are issues. What is an anathema now in the transplant world is paying for organs. For someone to go over to family and say, listen, we'll put down X amount of dollars for you to direct a donation to my family member. That is illegal in this country, but I'm not so sure whether that is halakhically impermissible. So I will now turn over to our whole
I guess to basically, in a nutshell, the question: how should organs be allocated? I guess the way the facts came into me was: what are the roles of first claims? The severity of illnesses? Does age play a factor? Does an old person
Is he less observant of an organ than a younger person? You only have one organ for two people. The shmiras hamitzvahs come into play. If one is a shemitah hamitzvah, the other one is not a shemitah hamitzvah. And I have one organ. To whom do I give it to? And the question about pain. It's an interesting thing. There is a fascinating Mishnah which Poskim have a lot of problems with in terms of how to deal with it in other areas. And that happens to be in Hilchos Tzedakah, and many use the same thing in Hilchos Refuah. Let's take a look at a very fascinating halacha. This happens to be a Mishnah in Hur Yud Gimel and Aleph, and halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Poil upon of Aniyim Harbet. You can't support the entire world. There's a lot of Aniyim, a lot of people standing with their hands out. Vein Bekit Lefarnei, so the Chasri, or Ksut, or the Pedusim Gaitis Kulam. You can't redeem them all. Magli Makoyim Lelevi, Halevi Le Yisrael, if it's a Koyim and a Levi, who do you give your $5 to? It's only $5. I don't have two fights. Give it to a Koyim over a Levi. My Levi Yisrael, and so on and so forth. The ger is at the end. Then it says later, it says, Bamed Vor Ma'amurim Bizman Shem Shovim B'chokmo. When do I say a Koyim is before a Levi and a Levi is before a Yisrael and so on? When they are on the same level in Chokmo. But if one is a Talmud Chokom, the other one is an Amoris, even a Mamzer Talmud Chokom, is Koidim, the Cholagodl, the Chokmo, is Koidim Lechaveru. Very interesting. It says the Pashas, you have a look in Hilchos Tzedakah. You have your $5 here, you give it first to a Koyim, then you give it to a Levi, and if there's no Levi, you give it to a Yisrael. And if it's a Talmud Chokom, Talmud Chokom comes before an Amoris. It's the same thing through Rabbi Yisai in Hilchos Refuah. I can only treat one patient at a time. There's only one organ. Do I give it first to a Kohen? Does the Kohen get the first choice? Does the lady get the other choice? Is the Yisrael the last choice? And if in fact there's a Talmud Chokhan, who's in need of an organ, does he override everybody else and we give it to the Talmud Chokhan just because he is a Talmud Chokhan? Or maybe we go on a first come, first served basis. Whoever applies first, first come, you're the first one on record, you ask for it, the first organ available goes to the first one. Interesting thing is, the Ramesh was asked many years ago about 8 meningitis patients at Hadassah Medical Center. Penicillin just arrived, but it was only one dose enough for 11 injections. Without even 30 seconds hesitation, he answered, the first bed the doctor comes to. Because the doctor has a chiv of refuah. So if he has a chiv of refuah, he can be doyched that chiv for somebody else. The chiv that comes before him is the one that stands first, and that's the one he gives it to. However, if you take a look at this tshuva, let's take a look, an eye-opener, we take this Mishnah seriously regarding Hilchos Refuah. The Kohen is before the Levi is before Yisrael. Are these halakhic determining factors? The Ramesh is followed. The Vadai Poshet Ubari says, the Yidua Lakol, the Kol Ben Tayri Yishumayim, everybody knows, Shem Mechuyodim, Lerapoy, Zazakiyah, Tehi, Lahatsu, Banosha, Epsha, Lakolodim. The Loishim Chilik Vechokmot Vedadah. Of course, basic Rapua mandates you heal everyone. It's nothing to do, they don't ask you how many Taisers you learned, how many Blepa Gemara you've learned. It has nothing to do with that. That's Poshet. And then he says, what about the Din Kadima, about precedent? Here Rav Moshe does seem to invoke the Mishnah. The Af Inyan Kadima Leke Ela B'mash Shisnam the Nesisnes of Huriyah. What's Halacha L'maaseh? Do we take this Mishnah and do we apply it? Rav Moshe here a little bit here, as you see, he's shaky. The Af Be'elu Kosha Lassus Maaseh B'lo Yim Godel. Not exactly sure exactly where he's directing us, but he says it's not so partial. The Mishnah that we just posed, that the Kohen is before the Levi, the Levi before the Yisrael, and so on, all of these things, the hierarchy, the Mishnah mentions, we have the Mishnah, would appear, and we might say it would appear that this applies to Rufu as well. He says, but it's kosher lasus maisa without Iyum Godel. And then he goes further. The Av Oifin is as Sheyoidim, and even when we know Shilfiyadin Yesh Kedim Vadai, and even let's say, if we assume that the Kohen is before the Levi is before Yisrael, even that is only true. In other words, no one came before the other. he says, because the Yeshua HaRoifa Leilach L'Misha Nikra Kodesh. The first obligation is for a doctor to treat and to provide to the one that came first, that solicited his services first, because Sharitekav Nitzchayev Leilach L'Sham U'L'Hashenish L'Nikra Dain. The second one is not here yet, L'Nitzchayev Achenikra. The only time, he says, Ramoitcha says, that you would skip the first and go to a second, is Verakim Hashenu who call it Koshim Erishi. The second one is suffering from much more severe illness than the first one. Then, Yeshua Leilach LaHashenu, because he's called the Yosef. Ba'achuaz over there, and therefore the ultimate decision is totally the Da'at HaRoshes. For definition purposes, when you talk about that whoever comes first, Ramoitcha says, the one that came first, he has the first chus, he has the dim kadima. There is a chuvin sitzeliezer, which by the way, in Meramis to it, you'll see it on the bottom, number 10, but you see it yourself, which is the last item here on this sheet. He says, the definition, he says, coming first does not mean you're the first one in the office. Because the doctor's not there yet, you're there first, you sat in the seat. You have sakinyan, by coming there, if you have zeichet that the doctor owes something to you. He says, when the doctor is there already, so now he has the chiyuv to treat whoever comes, so if you're the first one, after the doctor was there, he says, then there's a din kadima. But merely coming to the office opens 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're there from 12 o'clock, so there's 10 patients sitting there. But just because you have a line, the idea of a line is just for social, he says, keeping the peace. But this is by agreement that whoever comes first, he'll be treated first and so on and so forth. But this is not a halachic factor. The halachic factor of the din kadima, someone being first, as the Sicilianer means, it's only when the doctor is there already. So there his chiyuv refuah is chalad before him. Whoever comes first, his chiyuv refuah goes to him. But anybody who came before, the doctor was there. So if you have a few of them, just because somebody came first before the other one, the doctor wasn't there yet, doesn't give him a din kadima. But as you see, Ramosha's opinion is that the din kadima is to the one to whom solicited the doctor first. Now the doctor has his first obligation to him. Interesting thing is, take a look in number 7. I'm going to show you here. Move to number 7. And this happens, actually, we're talking about when the hospital, when we're saying, when the hospital has only one organ, only has only one injection, only a certain amount of penicillin, and to decide who to give it to, we're talking about, of course, if it's monitored by halakha, or the doctors who are interested in halakha. It's pointed out here in Asya, Kishakufa shall base hacholin, when the medication belongs to the hospital, because the medication belongs to hacholin, chayyab hacholin. Now, if hacholin himself has medication, he doesn't have to give it away to somebody else. Chayyab hacholin. But if the hospital, of course, is providing the medication, the hospital has to make a decision to whom to give it to. So, Kishakufa shall base hacholin, the ein bo dai lishnei hacholin, there's not enough for two. Right? There's only one respirator. Who do you give it to? Umatsovon. And the matzav is she'eto echad nitzin lahatzal l'chayishor. And let's say the matzav is that one you can only stay for chayishor. You just extend his life temporarily. There's a sheni l'chayoylam. Ha'chazaynish b'likutim l'chazaynish paskin z'am the Gemara in Bob Matthias. Kreisit. Shemamayim shalodim shlishi. The famous case between Rabbi Kiva ben Baturin. Shnayim shoyim halchem baderech. They don't have water. For both. One can drink and live. Both drink, but both are going to die. It's not enough. So the Kiva says, Chayef HaKaidman, if I have the water, I don't have to share it. I don't have to share it, and no one should live. Then the Torah says, Musaf Shemusaf Shneim, Bar Yira Echol, Ben Mikus Chaleyas. They should share. Same thing should be done to the Torah. A lot of it is in Terushim, Ben Torah. But the Kiva says, Chayef HaKaidman. But that's the water belongs to me. But if the water belongs to the third party, who does the third party give it to? So it says the Chazanish. In such a case, he says, Shemamayim Shodem Shlishi, Vein Behem Dai Vishneim, there's not enough for both. So without Ben Petura, Yechalik Mishnayim. Of course, the Ben Petura's view, you'd have to give it to both. Half and half. Because even if you give it to one, that person would have to share. Shagam im yitin le'echot mem yitzarach ha-mekabal. The one who received it would now have an obligation. It's Chalikim Chaveres. Without Rabbi Kiva, Chayiv litin le'echot, said the Chazanish. Because the only time Rabbi Kiva says that you keep a kim di bishvil chayecho koidim imam rotoyre chaye oilam shaloi koidim l'chaye shoshal ha-shem. Gam ha-noisin tzorech le'yishtadu v'ha-solet chaye oilam. So the idea is that you have to give it to the one who has chaye oilam over the one that would have chaye shosh. And then he points out the yesh linhoig l'fi sidre ha-kadima ha-muzkorim behuriyah. To follow the Seder, Mishnah Yisuri, Mishnah Yisuri, Lahagdim Ovid, the Rabbi Lacherim, you give it to your father and your Rebbe first, Rolakoroi, the Rusha Koidim, Renkoim Koidim Olevi, and so on and so forth. Right? We go now to the second, third last line. If you devorov, Shechay Oilam Adifim, Chay Oilam is better, Vadai Shemechat Choylu Bemach Lacherim. If someone has a different illness, v'chayov him rak chayishor, v'adai, shesh lahagdim et chaveroi, l'absolotoi l'chayo oilom, v'kidvorov kosogam v'machin chayim. So, if the question is, one only has chayishor, one has chayo oilom, then you give it to the one who's been healing and give him chayo oilom. Definition of chayishor, usually Moshe says it's under Yud Beit Chodesh. Anything that's under a year is called chayishor. So if one patient to be treated, if both, you give them only chayo shor, the other patient gives chayo olam, so then the patient has chayo olam. Otherwise, they also seem to follow the Seder of the Din Kedimah, the Kohen, Kohen, Balevi, and so on and so forth. Now, finally, what I want to show you here, look here, number 9, it's important to Kudus. And here you have basically a summary, which is brought down from Dr. Steinberg, which is an encyclopedia, Halachos Rafuos, which is a very popular place, of course, you may be very familiar with it. And he points out in a very interesting rundown, and I'll make a comment on it. He said like this, if you have one person, if he says the hopes of healing him, if the chances and the odds are better for one patient over another, that automatically gives him a din kedima. Even if the Amoris is the one who has the better odds, but if he has the better odds, then you treat him. Bari umesukin, by the way, bari doesn't mean he's healthy, why is he in the hospital? Bari means someone basically who can get well. But the other one's a mesukin, meaning to say is he may not, and there's a lot of doubts about his situation, about his healing process, so bari koidim. Chayoilam b'chayishor, if you have one who can heal permanently, and the other one only temporarily, chayoilam koidim. But again, very interesting thing, Ramesha says this, v'chol zehu davkim ha'choyla b'chayishor lo yedeyat masoro. The choyla b'chayishor does not know his matzah. It may aggravate his machlik. The very sick situation when a chayla sees that somehow he's being skipped over and he's giving treatment to someone else and he feels that either he was there first, he deserves it. But the chayla says, this idea, he says, when the chayla, the chayishor, does not know his machlik, he says, that's the situation. You have to be very careful about that. The point is, the bottom line is, says Vadai Mesukni, Sofik Mesukni says, the Vadai is Doite Eko Sofik. The Poiskim, contemporary Poiskim, point out that for some reason, and they're all groping for reasons, we don't follow the hierarchy of the Mishnah. Meaning, if you don't give treatment merely because someone's a Kohen first over a lady, you don't ask them to come into whatever you, by the way, have on record in your file, would be a Kohen. When the seller comes up, you ask for the Gabba, the Shul, to stand next to you in the office, what is it, a Kohen or a lady? Telling the truth, maybe posing as a Kohen now, you know, to get better treatment. We don't do that. You had a question, right. And there's a number of reasons for that the question points out that we don't do it today. Some say maybe because the Kohanim today maybe are not Miyuchosim, as Rabbi Yankee Vanzin himself, you know, to the extent that Kohanim today are not Miyuchosim, it's a revolutionary shit or controversial shit. Rabbi Yankee Vanzin said that if Pidyon HaBen, a Kohen should return the money. Why should be a Sophic Zale on the part of the Kohen? Very fascinating stuff of Rabbi Yankee Vanzin, because Kohanim today, unless they have a Yichus, otherwise he says you cannot rely on these for sure, and so you have them on Chazokah. So the case basically, so we don't follow this situation. According to the Gemara, also Tam Chokam Koydim Liamoret, Minigolim is not. Why? Because we cannot weigh the Torah mitzvahs of one yid over another. And many say this manazeh we don't have it in Tam Chokam. Others say that with Dabadi halachas we do have a halacha of a Tam Chokam. So, but what it appears to say is that, which Moshe points out at least that much, is that the one who solicits the organ to the doctor first, if he's a doctor to heal that particular person, we assume it would come on a first come first served basis. The Shaila regarding painful organs, halacha does not necessarily recognize what the government says in this area, that it would be offered to pay for it. And at some point, now technically, you'd be able to afford. There's a different Shaila that comes out. You're talking about organs that are from cadavers, which are from nations. So the Mishnah Sabrom introduces the Shaila, which is also discussed by other Pleishkin. You realize that Met Rabbeisai is Otzer Bahanoah. He's also to benefit from a mess. And therefore, when a person, basically all of his organs, technically are also bahanoah, which leads also to a lot of shilas in the extreme idea of transplanting itself. There's many shilas, the cornea transplants, and all these issues. They are overridden because of course, not the shilas, but there is other heterans. Famous Heter of Avunzerman says that once the organ is transplanted in the live person, it becomes rejuvenated, it becomes back to life, activated back to life, so you're not really being ahead of the mate. And once it's transplanted, basically now it works within a living person. You're not really continuously benefiting from something that is also Bahamut. But the idea of selling organs, the Mishnah Tavon points out that this may run to very serious shaylas. Many Rishayim hold that it's also an affair to have hamor from a neck, and Mishnah Melech and so on and so forth, the places, and furthermore than that, Shuvit Rashdam is going that it's also a drabonon, but he himself brings down many holds like him an affair. And from the Rambam, the opinion is also that it's midaraisa. That it's come up a very serious shaylas selling organs and some from cadavers as benefiting from Yitro Hamor. So that would be another shaylas out of left field, which is something very important. As a matter of fact, some certain Kidei already raised the issues, as well as the Chuvas Ram Sheikh. How did the Chetra Kedisha get paid for digging Kvarim and carrying Mason, carrying the beer, and washing, doing Taharas? They are benefiting from Mason. And the Atzilutim, of course, and the Sidus himself also talks about that. But many of those Atzilutim don't apply in the situation, so that would be another issue to edit. So basically these are the issues that we have covered, and I just want to say, Rabbi, that if there's anything that we didn't cover, I'd be glad to give you a fax number if you want, and anybody can fax them, then I'd be happy to respond to that opportunity. 718, if you're interested, 268-0186, 718-268-0186. And that should help, and that should be very good. It's only the shaylus, not the only theoretical shaylus, to be lalok and aplamaiser. It's pointed out the way that Sarah Shlomo said, Sarah Adamski, and the great Polish Rebbe, who instead he said that the reason he said there's so many shaylus and Hilchos Pesach, he says, because Hilchos Pesach is a very complicated shaylus, as you know that. First of all, there's very little time to learn, but it's important for Pesach. When we give him Hilchos Pesach, it's a complex issue. So the Pesach came with the times that the Rebbe Shlomo, of all the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Rabbonim, he says, they forget about me. The boys in setting up a special, don't worry about it. I'll send them Shiloh for the fourth kalender. So the Oyelim will learn Hilchos Pesach, they'll avoid Shiloh and Hilchos. Maybe discussing the halachas of Rafur, that Hashem will avoid all the meat for us and no longer halach and other meat.
Time for two short questions, if anyone has.
I have two. The
current system in the United States is to allocate organs by how close a patient is to death. In other words, the more severely ill patient is higher on the list, even though the efficacy would be better if you transplanted people when they were less close to death. Obviously, they're all candidates for chayitim, and they are all chelajes with takana. So, would the halacha agree with that? And to the organization refer on that basis?
That's also saying that some of these corporate users are more stringent.
The more severely ill the patient, the closer to death, the higher mortality of the misery.
Yeah, because the chai oilam, they're equal in the sense that all of them are really chai oilam.
Right.
And in his case, it's something more imminent.
I want to go back to the beginning. Part of the discussion was how physicians should handle their patients. And top doctors, good doctors, bad doctors, the original topic was something to the effect, let me read from my topic, was community-based referral. We do have some people here from community-based referral, and my question to the Rav is, number one is that seemingly we as physicians are governed by certain halachas. But to my knowledge, some of the community, and the ones that are here, I'm sure, are excellent community referral-based organizations. And as Dr. Leibovitz said, they do lots of good work. But there are many who set themselves up, and many community referral agencies to physicians who really have, to my knowledge, no guidance by halakha authorities. They operate independently. And sometimes they make referrals, as we say anecdotally, that are totally erroneous. They bypass the medical, an example would be, I know someone, and I know there are many, many good cases, someone had a headache who wasn't that medically savvy, called up one of the organization's referrals, and they sent them to a neurosurgeon. The neurosurgeon said, that's not my field. It turned out there were a lot of other medical disorders which finally came around, but it was really a misuse of a so, right, what would your comment be on how these, especially in the film community, how these organizations should be governed by halacha and what should we do about it and how they should interact with the medical community?
Well, as many situations are, when you have these organizations, in similar way, like you have many times, you have schools which have, like they have the Bada Chinuch, and there's certain people, experts in certain guidelines that they want to follow.
that the organizational officer has people in the know-how, basically a little bit to answer to, and they can set themselves up in ways that to guide them in the right direction, not just like you said, just to put up a particular, to have people, we have advisors, and as is in any important situation, and certainly in the halakha, to have certain halakhic advisors also, rabbinical advisors, people who have knowledge in these areas in this field. And we just have to set it up. Because you really have backing, have a lot of backing, and you have sound backing also, practical backing. And not just to set up this, and like you said, well intentions, I'm sure a lot of them do have, but this is what comes up.
We have a few brief questions.
We're very appreciative of all the organizations that do. I've told them, there's an idiom that's come up. There are a number of problems on the Shekhodim of Peter. In fact, it's convenient now in New York because the federal government of the United States passed the HIPAA Act, which is a privacy act that you're not allowed to speak about. Because very often people will approach me for being the president of so-and-so, and they approach other doctors, oh, how is Mr. So-and-so doing? As if they're part of a team. And now we can tell them that there's a HIPAA Act and they're not allowed to discuss it with them. But previously to this, I didn't see that there are abundance, because I actually know of people who didn't want to go into the hospital because they didn't want to get visited by people from being the Kailim or from Asola who were being involved with. And I think that there is a hybrid, just like a doctor is not allowed to talk about his patients, I think that the people from Bikr Kailim Asola should have some kind of hadrocha from their abundance about these issues.
Right. To my understanding, is it not that if somebody wants to call up the welfare of the patient, they will don't tell the desk also in the hospital, because how's the phones are doing, so they give you some information.
Well, what the hospital does is they give you a statement that the hospital has. And that statement is generic enough, but really doesn't bother.